Kia ora, I'm Simon Hampton. Welcome in to Kiwis Abroad on Sky Sport, where we take an in-depth look at the Kiwi athletes plying their trade around the world. On today's show, the Japanese Top League has delayed the start of its season following a COVID surge in the country, and that's meant the much-anticipated debut of All Black Beauden Barrett at Suntory has had to wait. Dear Kiwi head coach Milton Haig joins me from Japan a little later on in the show, but first, very few people can claim they've driven a Formula One car, but Kiwi Marcus Armstrong can now claim himself to be part of that exclusive club, and in a Ferrari, no less. The F2 driver took a test drive in their famous F1 car in Italy last weekend, and to talk a bit about that experience, Marcus Armstrong joins me now on Kiwis Abroad. Marcus, thanks so much for your time. That must have been a pretty special experience.
Yeah, special experience to say the least. It's been a long time coming, to be honest. It's been sort of in the books for a while, that test. And quite honestly, leading up to it, I was quite sure that it would be snowed off or something strange like that. It didn't quite seem real that it was actually going to happen. And obviously, the day came, and as you say, extremely special. Firstly, to drive an F1 car full stop is an experience that so many young racing drivers dream of. But then it's also a Ferrari, so that's just like, again, a double step of specialness, if that makes sense. So yeah, I mean, it's been obviously a childhood dream of mine to drive a Ferrari Formula One car, especially here at the test track, Fiorano, literally over the fence from the factory. So surreal experience.
When you first drove the car out of the garage and you put the foot down onto the track, did you get a sort of rush of adrenaline?
I tried not to think about it too much. I tried to sort of approach the test as any other test that I've had, the hundreds, maybe thousands of tests that I've had in my career so far. So I tried to sort of keep it super simple and just build up to it and just do what I would normally do. So I tried my best not to become overwhelmed with the whole experience. Obviously, it's difficult to treat it like any other test when you walk into the garage and there's 30 mechanics that you've never seen before and even more engineers sitting behind the pit wall. So in that regard, it was difficult to treat it like every other test. But at the same time, I just needed to focus and do what I know I can do. That was the main thing for me.
What does it feel like to drive a Formula One car?
I mean, it's fast. You probably didn't need me to say that. It's obviously massively quick. There's a lot of downforce on the car. And for those who don't fully understand how the concept of downforce improves the performance of a race car, it's fundamentally what keeps the car attached to the tarmac. So the more downforce you have, the more grip you have, quite simply. And the amount of downforce is near 3 tons at top speed in a Formula One car, which is, I mean, it's a remarkable feeling because you can do more or less anything you want with the car and it will do it because there's just that much grip. For example, you can hit the brake. You can literally hit the brake through the end of the car and you will never lock the tires at that sort of speed with that amount of downforce. So I'd say the main key word of driving a Formula One car is just grip. There's just tons of it. And coming from F2 or F3, it's a whole different ball game.
Is it quite physically exhausting as well? I've seen interviews with other Formula One drivers and they've talked about how stiff or how tough it is on their neck and their neck muscles. Did you notice the physical demands of driving it?
Yeah, absolutely. On the neck, it's remarkably difficult. I do a lot of neck training, obviously, just to keep myself. I never want to get to the point where I have to rebuild my neck strength. It's easy to get to that point during the off season when you're not driving a race car for an extended period of time. But under brakes, as I say, the car stops from 300 and something k's an hour to 90 in the space of probably 60 meters. So the forces on the neck, the back of the neck is huge. Also high speed corners in general, you obviously have a lot of G force, and again, it's much more difficult than it looks from the outside. But funnily enough, the steering wheel is very light. Not too dissimilar from a road car because of the power steering, the very complicated technology they have. If we compare to Formula 2, we don't have power steering and the steering is extremely heavy, especially when you're in high speed corners. So coming from F2 to F1, it was extremely nice actually having a light steering. Although at times it feels a bit strange when you've got that much speed and the steering is perfectly light, it is a bit strange. But yeah, the neck, I would say, is the most difficult part.
So you touch on the power steering as a difference from F2. What are the other key differences in going from an F2 car to an F1 car?
Fundamentally, it's quite similar in terms of driving styles. You just need to maximize the grip you have, which obviously you have a lot more grip in Formula One, so the limit is a bit further. And I think in F1, there's so many things that you need to think about. Obviously, after just one test, I can't get to the point where I can say I nailed all of it, but there's obviously a lot of dials on the steering wheel where you can more or less perfect the car that you have underneath you, and you're constantly in communication with your engineer who's on the pit wall, and there's a lot of things that you need to be thinking about at the same time as driving a race car. And in Formula One, it seems like, yeah, there's a lot more to think about, and you need to have a lot more free space in your mind to think about these things that driving is the easy part, more or less. It's everything else that goes with it. So yeah, you have to think about a lot when you're driving an F1 car that maybe it doesn't look like that from the outside, but yeah.
Overall, Ferrari's struggles in the past F1 season were pretty well documented. But for you, the Ferrari Driver Academy, do you think like you're growing the way you'd like in there?
absolutely. It's a phenomenal experience being here. I've been living here in Maranello for 3 years, maybe even more. And working with fundamentally the best engineers and mechanics in the world, it's something really special. And every day that I'm working here, whether it be in the simulator or anything really, I'm learning a lot and trying to pick the brains of all these geniuses in a way, because it's obviously my passion, so I find it extremely interesting. And the way they develop an F1 car, how they make it from scratch more or less, and then they make it into such a phenomenal car, almost a spaceship, borderline a spaceship. Yeah, it fascinates me. So as a driver, to feel what the car is doing and then try and describe it in a way that correlates well to the numbers on the laptop, that's a challenge in itself. And if you can do it well, there's a big benefit to it, and there's a good performance gain, because small little improvements on it on a race car makes a huge difference, especially at a high level. So yeah, every day I'm just doing my best to develop myself as well as possible, help them with whatever they need. And yeah, again, I'm living my dream. It's obviously a long process to get to where I want to go, but yeah, living my dream.
Does taking a test drive in an F1 car really fuel the desire to one day be racing F1 cars?
I don't need any more determination than what I have, but it definitely woke the giant of, I mean, it's sort of, yeah, it shows me what the possibilities are if everything goes well in the near future. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to think about the future in that regard, but I need to stay focused on what my season is in Formula 2. I mean, results in Formula 2 mean prizes onwards. So, yeah, I just need to stay focused in the short term for now.
Well, on Formula 2, last season you finished 13th, but you had 2 podiums, so some good moments there. What did you make of last season?
Last season was quite terrible, to be honest. Comparing my previous season in F3, finished 2nd in the season. We arrived in F2 as, yeah, virtually one of the favourites. And after the first 2 race weekends, I think we were 3rd in the championship. And from there on out, it didn't quite go our way. And we know where it went wrong. And I needed a change of scenery. So I've changed teams to Dams, which is an extremely well high-regarded team. They've won the championship so many times. And a lot of my heroes have gone through that team and worked with the engineers that I'm working with now. So I have a really good feeling about this season. Obviously, my experience at this point of the season compared to last year is remarkably different. And in Formula 2, we have so little track time. It's almost, well, it's virtually the only sport on the planet where you cannot practice. Practicing is forbidden. So you need to arrive and be on it straight away. And experience is one of the most important things when in a sport like this. So, yeah, this season, I have a good feeling. Obviously, the new team, and I feel as though they bring the best out in people. They bring out the creativity in myself and the engineers as well. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
So what is the target for this season? And does having a difficult campaign last year sort of, I guess, toughen you up for next season? And I don't want to say motivate you further, because you'll already have a lot of motivation, but I guess, you know, some tough experiences can bode well for the future as well.
Yeah, exactly. You sound like my dad. You know, tough times are ultimately gonna help you. But my expectations for this season, well, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to win the championship. And I see it as a realistic goal. It's not like I'm striving for something that's unrealistic. Last season in F3, 2019, when I was in F3, I was actually incredibly pissed off to finish 2nd in the championship. So I've always been one of those guys that pushes for first place no matter what. And this season, it's going to be one of those years that you need to really crack onto it straight away. There's only 8 rounds this season, 3 races per weekend. So it's going to be one of those seasons where you need to be on it right from the first moment and then not put a foot wrong. So, I mean, all I can do is really keep it simple and do what I can do, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to win.
Hey, well, best of luck, mate. We'll look forward to following your progress this season and ahead of what we hope is a very exciting career in Formula One racing. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Marcus Armstrong there. And he's not the only Kiwi driver in Formula 2 this year. Liam Lawson as well taking part. He's racing for Hi-Tech as part of Red Bull's junior program. So certainly exciting times for Kiwi motorsport. Well, to Japan now, and the debut of All Black Bowden Barrett at Suntory has had to wait a month after the delay of the top league season due to COVID. Suntory coach Milton Haig spoke to me last night, and I began by getting the latest from him on the situation in Japan.
Yeah, well, the top league's been suspended for probably about a month, I think, by the time we get back into it. And that's just basically because obviously with the increases in positive cases in Japan, you know, the Japan Rugby Union didn't want to take any chances, and obviously in play its part in trying to reduce those cases. So it's been delayed until February the 21st. We were supposed to start on the 16th of January, but so everybody's basically into pre-season. So it's just elongated our pre-season.
So you've just come off the training field now. So you guys can train all good at the moment. What sort of restrictions are there on the team though?
No restrictions in terms of once we're on the field. We've got some restrictions around, obviously, when we have meetings and the amount of people and being 2 metres apart and making sure that the meetings are under 15 minutes. So sort of something that we've not really encountered before, and I suppose a lot of the Japan teams, exactly the Japanese teams, are the same. But again, it makes you adapt, and you just got to find different ways of how to communicate to the players and within the players group and get on with it, really. So again, I think if you talk about it and it becomes a problem, and you talk about that it's a problem, I think it then becomes a problem. So we've just moved on quickly and adapted it a little bit, and you know, on field stuff is pretty normal.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, when the season is postponed so close to the season starting, it's pretty difficult when you've ramped up your pre-season to a point, you know, where you're ready to go, and now you've got another month of training.
Yeah, well, exactly. Everything's about timing, you know what I mean? So you're making sure that your form is timed in terms of when you want to start the season, so that you get to the start of the season and you're at your peak. And we were right there. You know, came off a good win against Panasonic, Robbie Deans' team, and you know, we were starting the next week, and then it gets all cancelled, so it sort of throws you back a little bit. But again, it's just about making sure that you stay positive about it, I think, and that's the key. And just say to ourselves, right, this is what it is. How do we adapt from this, and how do we make sure that we've got the program going forward?
Yeah, your team made big headlines bringing in Beauden Barrett, of course. What's it been like having him around the team?
Yeah, no, it's been great. He's been awesome, as you would expect. You know what I mean? He's a very experienced Test rugby player, international player now. He's really shared his knowledge since coming in. He's a good bloke, that's first and foremost. So he's fitted in really, really well with people that are here already. And as I say, he's not afraid to use that leadership that he has. He was directly put into the leadership group, and you know, he's really shown his worth. So, and he's played a few footy games, and so he's played pretty well too. So you know, he's going to play 10 for us, and so if we can give him the ball as much as possible, we hope he can do good things.
I guess you sometimes might worry that a big star comes into a new team, and you know, maybe, you know, perceives himself as bigger than the team, but there's been no issues whatsoever with Beauden. He's been helping out all the players and offering his insights and experiences to the team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, look, he's just not that character. He's not that type of person. He's a you know, pretty relaxed sort of a guy, and you know, obviously somebody who's been world rugby player of the year twice. You know, you could maybe expect that he's got a bit of an ego, but no, he doesn't at all. It's absolutely the opposite of this guy. And but Beauden, as I say, he's really helped everybody here, and he's more than open to sharing ideas and sharing his knowledge and stuff like that. So that's fantastic.
You guys were runner-up, I think, the season before last. Of course, this last season was postponed after six games. So, you know, this is a good team. And now when you bring in a guy like Beauden Barrett, the expectations must be pretty high, and the energy must be pretty high in this team to hopefully go quite far in this competition.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, you know, we don't recruit, you know, average players. We'd like to, if we've got a position of a capped player or an international player, we only have three in the team, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, he's world class. And so, you know, and again, he'll be used to the expectation. He's been, you know, playing for the All Blacks for a number of years now. So, you know, he'll be used to that. And when you come to Suntory, it's, you know, the owner expects that we win the competition every year. So he doesn't let up on that pressure, that's for sure. And so, you know, we've got other good players that are around Beauden. So hopefully if we can gel well and we can get into the competition quickly and get some form and continue, because it's obviously now a shortened season, you know, then, you know, we hopefully that we can make sure that we win the championship.
Has it been, I guess, frustrating for you when you come over from Japan, from Georgia to Japan, and your first season's cut short after 6 games, and your second season's now delayed by a month? Has that been a sort of frustrating 12 months?
Yeah, no, it is. It's you know, because what you want to try and do is, you know, you come to a big club like this, you want to try and make sure you can prove your credibility as a coach and as a head coach. And so, you know, we were on the right track last year when it got cancelled, and we were really playing quite good footy, and you know, it was frustrating. And so, again, we were hoping that wouldn't happen again this year, but it has. And I mean, that's just the way that it goes. But you know, again, it's just a matter of adapting and you know, making sure that we stay positive, as I said before. And once we get on the footy field, just let business take care of itself, really.
What's been the big difference, I guess, you know, changing from being the national team coach in Georgia to coming to a club side in Japan?
Yeah, well, national, you only get three, you know, if you're an international coach, you only get 3 campaigns generally in a year, but they're frantic, you know what I mean? So you do a lot of prep time, and then, you know, you're just flat out 24/7 generally in campaigns. Whereas, you know, once you come to a club environment, it's, you know, every day, every week, you know, and it's a grind, you know what I mean? So you've just got to make sure that, you know, you have your times where you get some downtime with your family and you get away. But really, it's the one thing that you can do as a club coach is that you can affect change in players. You can make sure that, you know, you can turn bad habits into good habits. You can make good players very good players, and you can make, you know, very good players world class. And so you have that time to be able to spend with them and really put some energy into them. So I'm really, really liking that part to it. But again, as I say, it's an everyday grind, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're good mates with Eddie Jones, the England coach, and he coached Suntory before and obviously had great success with Japan as well. Did he offer any insights into coaching in Japan before you arrived?
Yeah, no, I'd spoken to him a couple of years ago about coaching in Japan. It was something that I always wanted to do and have that experience. And he just said, mate, you know, you'd love it over there. You'd love the players. You'd love the fact that they're dedicated players and they put so much into their skill sets. And he was absolutely correct. You know what I mean? These guys train really, really hard and they spend a lot of time trying to make themselves better. So, you know, he gave me some really nice insights, and obviously as our director of rugby, he has a fair bit of input into what we do. He's just spent 3 weeks with us over the Christmas New Year time and before we went back to England. So, you know, again, it's been really good, and his experience is really, really helpful for everybody.
We've seen the Japanese top league become almost the preferred league of choice for New Zealanders to come and play overseas, possibly more preferred than the European leagues. Is that a trend that you think you can see continuing, and what do you put that down to?
I think obviously the World Cup had a big influence. I think the fact that it's closer to home in terms of being New Zealand or Australia, I think is a big factor because, you know, it's a long way from Europe, obviously. And the seasons, the actual seasons themselves are shorter in terms of the competition season. So, but again, I think it's also a place that a lot of players have fascinated about for a long time, you know what I mean? I wonder what it's like over there. Obviously, the culture, the different language, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think it's definitely a trend that will keep going as we go forward, that's for sure.
And finally, mate, enjoying life over in Japan with you and the family?
Yeah, no, mate. The girls are obviously, as you know, they go to international schools. They did in Georgia, and now they are in here in Japan. And my wife Angelique is having a ball going to the gym and doing shopping, because if the one place I've got teenage daughters now, as you know, one place if you want to shop, Japan's the place to come. so that's been a bit interesting for the old wallet, but no, it's been fantastic, and you know, they're really enjoying it.
All right, brilliant stuff, Milton. Thanks thanks so much for coming on the show, and best of luck for the season when it does get underway in a few weeks' time.
I appreciate it, mate. Thanks very much.
All right, Milton Haig there joining me from Japan. High expectations for that Suntory side with Beauden Barrett in their ranks. So it'll be interesting to follow their campaign this season. Remember, Sky is, of course, the home of rugby, and you'll be able to catch all of the upcoming Super Rugby season right here on Sky Sport. All right, that wraps up this episode of Kiwis Abroad. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. Take care.